airline miles versus bank points on today's Milenomics Squared podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Simon.
And I'm Robert Dwyer.
And this is the Milenomics Podcast, no annual fee edition.
If you're not subscribed to the full Milenomics Squared podcast, you're missing out on a deeper dive into topics like the following.
Airlines versus bank points, Robert. We're having a little bit of a head-to-head here, right, on the show?
Yeah, I think experience dictates so much of what our perspective is on how this stuff works. And, you know, if your recent three data points say that bank points work better for you than airline miles, then you'd be foolish to go out, no matter what anybody else says. If they're flying to Southeast Asia and, you know, South Africa,
right,
and you're just trying to get home for a wedding, you're not doing the thing that's right for you. So I think that's what we want to hash out today.
I like that. I think we should set the stage with why we think this is important. Like, what's the point of talking about this in general? If everyone should just kind of like figure their own method out, why even talk about what we're talking about?
Yeah, there has been a rise of bank points in the past few years, I think, right? Maybe 10 years, you know, and banks are trying to exert their might in this space from being just co-branded partners of airline and hotel cards to being a currency of sort. I don't know who was first with this, Chase Ultimate Rewards, Amex Membership Rewards, Citi Thank You Points and more, but they really have become a thing, you know, that's almost like more important than airlines. So you look at what Delta does with Amex and what Chase does with United and all the partnerships. It's just a really unique, not just a currency, but almost like a small country or something like that, the way things have built up there. And at some point, you wonder if there's going to be some, you know, congressional oversight into, gosh, these currencies. What are these people doing? It's almost like crypto or something like that. They're going off and creating their own currencies because they can devalue the what you get
sure,
out of them
whenever they want.
And we've seen that with Amex recently. You know, it becomes not as valuable a business platinum, how much, you know, what you can do
thank
to book
it.
Yeah, everything gets, you know, devalued over time. So it's a very, very important and tricky thing to navigate. But there's pros and cons of each. And maybe start off with just kind of define a little bit what an airline mile is versus a bank point. I just rattled off a bunch of them. But, you know, in simple terms, an airline has a currency. And each of these banks have currencies which might be able to transfer to airline miles, but it becomes very complicated to walk through. Say, should I pay cash for this? Should I redeem through the bank travel portal? Or should I transfer to an airline and use those miles? Or do I want to just use a co-branded card and earn miles directly and be completely tied into that system? It's a pretty problematic path to navigate because it starts at the point of spend or the welcome bonus that you get.
It does. And the math, Robert, you know, as you're talking about devaluing the bank point, I'm thinking about the inflation of the cost of travel as well. Mm-hmm. And so those two things happen and you end up with a massively devalued currency over time. And so for me, when I'm thinking about both of these, I'm thinking about, I don't want to hold these. I really don't. I don't want large numbers of these being hoarded by me or anyone really, because they are not an asset that appreciates in value. Over time, it has been proven almost exclusively they are worth less and less and less and less. So the idea that I think they're scarce is also something that's not true. You know, people always say like, well, I want to hold on to these because it could get really difficult to earn these. And I don't think that that's true either, Robert. I think that everybody in this game wants transactions. That's the whole thing. Credit cards want transactions. Airlines want transactions. In fact, airline getting those miles off of the books is important. Credit card transacting and earning more points is the key, because if you just sit there with your points, then they're not actually doing anything for you or the bank. So airline miles, I would say, are much more complicated because each airline program has a completely different method of using the points and searching and booking, but every bank has that too. I mean, try to explain to someone how to use a membership reward off of a business platinum for their 35% uplift, Robert. And that is just as complicated as a partner booking with airline miles, I think. Maybe more. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would think it would be simpler because you're just looking and seeing a cash price and then the number of membership rewards that you need is tied to that. But you can have all kinds of things that complicate that, you know, not least of all, the way that Amex has put that program together to make it utterly confusing to make that redemption. a Chase is more straightforward. You just see the price and that tells you how many points it is, and it has a certain cent per point value. But even Chase now has made it much more complicated. Oh, you get a certain amount of uplift for this type of airline and this type of cabin and
this card just, and not, yeah.
Yeah. Earning on one card, redeeming on another within the same portfolio. Just really, really crazy and complicated. What's that service that you, that's a, the plug-in to browsers, Points Path or something? Yeah. It purports to make it very easy. Should I use miles or should I pay cash? But it's so much more complicated than that, right? Should I use bank points? Am I concerned about refundability on this? What if the price of the flight goes down? Can I capture that somehow? What if I book with a bank point and I need to change the flight? Far out, close in? I mean, I've seen situations with American where they say, hey, you booked us the bank point. Go talk to the bank. And I'm like, I'm at the airport. I'm looking to change flights right now. You can't help me? It's like, oh, no, you booked that with somebody else. That's not with us. So there's trade-offs for all of these things that aren't necessarily just a math problem. There's a lot of nuance that comes with it. I hope we can talk through some of that today.
I want to cover the bank point strengths, I guess I would say, first, Robert. And I do think that at one point, paid tickets were very hard and very confusing to find refundable fares. It was tough. I mean, and if they weren't refundable, there was a really big cancellation fee. That's pretty much gone now. Most airlines have these fare buckets. And I mean, I'm thinking, they're named completely different. I don't know what Deltas are named at this point. It's like Main Cabin Comfort, Main Cabin Classic, First Class. The naming is wild. But for the majority of these airlines, it's just a small premium to make sure that you can completely cancel that fare. And with bank points, what's nice is if you book it with bank points as a refundable fare and cancel it, you get those bank points right back in and retain the flexibility that bank points have. You could transfer them to an airline, or you could book a hotel, or you could book a flight. And usually you can go across alliances. You can book almost any ticket that you can find, you can book as long as it's in the portal. And sometimes even when it's not in the portal, you can do things like call up and book Southwest or, wild and crazy airlines that you've never heard of. And then when you book with bank points, you actually earn miles as well because they're paid fares. So hotel bookings with bank points allow you to, a lot of times now, put your loyalty number in so you can get benefits like your Hilton Diamond benefits or your Hyatt Globalist benefits while using those bank points. And I think that that's a relatively new change to bank points. And has helped, I think, on the hotel side, although there are some hotel drawbacks that I think we'll talk about later as well. But if you're team bank point, I think those are pretty much the major benefits. Is there anything you want to add there, or you want to talk about airline miles?
Well, right off the bat, you raised something that I wasn't really fully aware of and have never done myself, and that is to book a refundable fare with a bank point. In fact, I've never booked a refundable fare ever in my life on any airline.
So, really?
Well, it's more expensive, right? And if you're going to take the flight, it's like you're paying it for insurance. I don't like buying insurance for things that are, might or might not happen. And if I'm going to take a flight and, you do usually have the option, if you have paid cash and it was non-refundable, you have the option with, modest cancellation fees or no cancellation fees in this case, you can get it for, you can get a flight credit. So if you're booking with an airline that you're frequently flying with, within, they all have different rules, of course, but within a year of when you ticketed it, you can use it for another flight. So that does, though, get complicated with involving the bank point travel company sometimes. But you say, if I book a refundable, not only can I refund it, I get it back in the back to the points. It doesn't come result in a credit with the airline or something like that. I truly get it refunded back to not to cash, not to the airline's travel credit, but to the ultimate rewards or the Amex membership rewards. Have you done that? That's interesting.
I have done that. And you know what? It drives me nuts, though. I mean, I called it a strength, but here's why it drives me nuts. I will book this flight as refundable because I will say, I'm not sure I'm going to take it. I really am looking for a better option, or I don't know if the trip's going to happen. And inevitably what happens is the airline changes the flight anyway, which is an event that would make a non-refundable ticket completely refundable. Mm-hmm. So I've paid more and then I end up on a flight that I could have paid less for. They'll say oh, you're on the nonstop. We're going to move you to the one stop out of San Francisco or something crazy. And you go, if I wanted that, I could have saved $200 and booked that at the beginning. And so I get frustrated with paid tickets and paid tickets with bank points because I have low My win rate of booking and flying tickets is pretty low, I would say, Robert. You know, I have a lot of these provisional bookings, and I mean, I'm way out there. Most normal people in the world will book like you. I just booked the cheapest fare. I know I'm going on this trip. I don't plan on canceling it. It's not a big deal. Yeah. So maybe I'm overcomplicating things by booking into those cancelable fare buckets, but yeah, I have little kids. I always want to retain that flexibility, and it's usually not much more.
Yeah. Well, as you're talking, my mind got going to all the things about bank points that annoy me, but we're in the benefits section here.
Yeah, we're not there yet. No.
I do book a lot of fares through bank points. I can't remember the last time I got a credit card and just paid cash for an airline ticket. And there are a lot of really good ways with Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and others to gin up points that you can use for pretty much any airline that you want. And it's not tied to the airline of choice. It's not tied to whatever. And there's uplift for it. For some reason, these bank point portals, most of them want you to book tickets through them, and they'll give you more value than if you cashed out and booked directly. So I'll get to the negatives of it in a second when we talk about that. But I really do like these, and this is the way I do the majority of my booking domestically.
I think I need to actually, for full disclosure, mention that it's the way that I make the least of my bookings. In fact, I'm much more likely to book something with miles. So I think that's what started the discussion. You and I were like just casually saying like bank points, right? And I was like, no, not bank miles, right? And you were like, no, bank points. And so we realized, hey, there's probably more to this because we're not seeing it the same way. We don't live in the same cities. We don't travel the same way. Our kids are different ages. So like you said at the top end of the show, it's very different depending on your travel style and your travel patterns. But we haven't talked about the benefits to airline miles. You want to go over some of those?
Yeah, I think the flexibility is key on those, right? Just the ability to cancel and get the miles back. You know, if you've got a big stash of your favorite carrier, your hometown airline, you know, American, Delta, whatever it is, not universally for international carriers, but I think almost all the domestic carriers, you book with airline miles, you can cancel that up to the day of. So it's very nice to be able to book things provisionally, you know, like I'm not sure I'm going to take this trip, but I've got enough miles that I can tie them up and just click the button, cancel. Hopefully most airlines, they come back automatically. And it's a very low friction thing compared to booking with a bank point and getting those back. So that is one of the things I think is incredible. You know, since before COVID, that was probably a characteristic that was better about airline miles. You know, the refundability, so to speak, of bank points or cash bookings with airlines, that's not really full cancelability, and that's a ticking time bomb that's going to run out in a year. And like JetBlue is particularly terrible about that. So
Southwest is the worst now, I think, Robert.
Yeah. So and it's constantly changing, as we're talking about there, over the past 5 years. So, but I think booking with airline miles, the flexibility has always been a really key thing.
I agree. It leads me to do insane things. Like next spring break, Robert, I'm going to either Maui or Kauai, and I'm booked to go to both. And I can't be in two places at once.
Yeah.
And that's not normal. But if you're that kind of person where like someone says, hey, we should go somewhere, and you go home and you go, I already booked it. I mean, it's done. If we're going to go or not, I don't know, but I've done it. And I just like to button those things up. And I think miles let me button them up ahead of time and then press a button later and get everything back. But the issue is that like there's no fixed value for these. I mean, maybe is that a strength that there's no fixed value, or is that a weakness?
That's a tricky one to dissect. And you put that in as a benefit, that the value is not pegged to the dollar cost of a flight, but that cuts both ways, right? It depends on the cost of the flight and how many miles it takes. So walk us through that. What scenarios do you see that being a strength for miles?
Well, like for a bank point, for example, let's say that a bank gives you, I don't know, 1.5 cents per bank point towards flights. We've seen situations, Robert, where the flight price is only the flight price when you book it direct with an airline. AA was notorious for this, where they were forcing people into booking channels, and if you couldn't get into those booking channels, the prices were higher. But you get 1.5 cents. Let's just assume that the flight price is the flight price. 1.5 cents is the maximum. It's also the minimum. It is the value you will get. Now, with an airline mile, the price is set by the airline as some kind of factor of how likely they think they'll sell it for cash, how many extra seats they have, how high demand is. And so in situations where you have a low price in miles and a high price in dollars, you can book it with those airline miles, and the price in dollars doesn't necessarily matter. Now, there are airlines like Delta where it's pretty much pegged, Southwest, pretty much pegged to a fixed value. And so those are in even more complicated because, let's say, for example, you could transfer a membership reward to Delta, or you could book with membership rewards as a bank point on Delta. You could transfer an ultimate reward to a Southwest Rapid Reward point, or you could book with, you know, the Chase Travel Portal as a bank point. So you have to really get to the math with it and say, what's the value per point if I book it as a cash fare with bank points? And what's the value per point if I book it as a airline mile? And then you got to think, well, and then the cancellations, and then we can get into some of the negatives of it as well. But just this is like a fixed value versus a floating value or a variable value.
Yeah, I think there's pegging to the dollar, and then there's the likelihood of miles being a good redemption being correlated, like you say, to the chances they think they have of selling that seat. I do like in this game when there's a magic of miles kind of thing going on where you can feel super clever. And I see this the only time I've really seen it a lot. International is one thing, right? I think that is a strength of airline miles, that I probably would not have ever flown to Japan or Germany in business class or better if it wasn't for the magic of airline miles. The outsized value that you get out of that in most cases is just so big. Like I couldn't, even with 2 cents a piece of uplift, justify in my mind paying $10,000 round trip to Japan in business class or Lufthansa first class for whatever the heck they charge for that, even as booked as a round trip ticket. I could never justify that in my mind. But when it's 88,000 miles or 60,000 miles, it becomes this great thing that airline miles unlock. I think that is a key attribute of them. But domestically, the case where I see airline miles getting me out of jail is short haul, expensive, short notice AA flights. That still exists. You know, you can find a saver level AA award for a flight that costs like $500 because there are three more seats on it. It's a flight from like with a connection to, you know, Pennsylvania or something like that. And I'm like, this is fantastic. I wish I had more AA miles in my life. It saved me. But I don't see that tendency broadly across the remaining carriers, the legacy carriers or the new guard carriers, right? Delta, like you said, relatively pegged to the price of the flight domestically. Same with JetBlue, a big carrier. Southwest, you mentioned as well. United is just expensive to me. I mean, I see value internationally still, but just they're expensive with miles. They're expensive with cash. They're just an expensive airline. AA is the one company. They said they were going to start being more dynamically priced, meaning relatively pegged to the dollar, but they still have that tendency of having that magic last minute tendency. And I'm mildly concerned that that characteristic is just going to go away because they seem to be the only one that's still doing it. Okay, all that said, you say, well, okay, well, if they're going to drop the price with miles, they're probably going to open it up to partners as well. And then you get into crazy things where you're booking an AA flight with Alaska Miles or British Airways Avios and all this other stuff, yeah, all this other complexity comes into it. But in rough terms, I think those are the benefits of airline miles, that you can have the magic of miles to be able to do something that's a really outsized cent per point value that you can't get with any kind of bank point.
That's a great like recap of the U.S. carriers. And then we didn't really want to get into it, but I mean, there are ways to book with foreign carriers. And you look at some of these banks and who they've, you know, partnered up with. I mean, we were just recording a paid show. We're talking about Vietnam Airways and Scandinavian Airways. It's like, what? Like, how did we get there from here? But keeping it simple, you want to be in the program that you know the most as far as airline miles. And when it makes sense, you book with airline miles. When it doesn't, you don't. I think that that's really, you can't be one camp only.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't. It's just, there's too much possible upside on each of these to just go, nope, never going to book on a bank point. That's a waste of my time. I'm transferring everything over to British Airways.
No, the strong player in this game really does, is conversant in both things. And it's not like, I don't know what that is about human nature, right? You see people right away, oh no, you know, Yankees, Dodgers, you know, rah, rah, rah. You don't need to pick a team here. You need to do the thing that's right for the situation. And I think these tools, award tool, Pointia, whatever else, have made it so much easier for the average person
yeah,
to be successful in using their bank points, especially internationally, to look at these combinations of bank point to carrier to and finding the award availability. That was really hard before. That employed a small industry of people that were collecting money to help people navigate the complexity. I think these tools do make it easier, but it's also easier to get yourself into a lot of trouble being overly clever, booking, you know, with Thai Airways miles instead of United when you just want to take one flight to Europe and then the flight gets canceled and all of a sudden you're stuck with a bunch of crazy foreign carrier miles that are prone to expiration. And you didn't even know it going into it. So you can hire a consultant to do something for you that's so complicated that, it probably took you into a worse direction to save you a small amount of miles in the transaction. So I think it's something we preach a lot. Just try to keep things as simple as possible. And it's not just a matter of how many miles it costs to book the flight. It's all the stuff that comes around it.
That segues really well to the weaknesses of airline miles. I am not going to say there are none. And I want to pull a couple up here in the show notes. They are orphaning those miles. That's when you transfer in miles to a program. Recently, I did this. Transferred in a bunch of miles to Alaska, thinking, oh, I've got this great opportunity. I'm going to book these seats. And I click to book the seats. And, you know, they're showing on the search engines and they're showing on Alaska's website. And I get an error. And it's Phantom Space, ugh. Robert. And I'm like, I call the agent. The agent says, yeah, there's a memo. It's Phantom Space. And you might be able to get your points transferred back. But, you know, I can imagine someone's first experience. There's got to be someone out there. Their first experience with airline miles is that. And they're just like, devastated. Like, I knew it was a scam. I knew it. You know, sounds too good to be true. I'm going to get this huge, extreme, you know, $5,000-$6,000 ticket for, you know, $1,000 worth of points. That's too good to be true. And yep, it was. So I think that is something that can happen. And, you know, there's that nervousness. Your first big trip, you think back to it, Robert. I don't know what yours was, but I can remember mine. I was like nervous, like waiting for it to ticket. And, you know, I'm like, oh, this needs to work because there's no backup. I mean, I didn't have, you know, buckets and buckets of points to transition to and make things happen. So I think you can end up in a really, really bad spot with airline miles, and everyone kind of just goes, oh, no, sorry. And that doesn't happen with bank points.
That's such a great call, because you're right. The most devastating mistakes seem to happen when you can least afford it. When you want to go on a once in a lifetime dream trip, you've done everything to save up 500,000 United miles to take some trip, and then you mess it up, and the space isn't there, and you need to transfer it to Air France instead of United, and then you had Chase. You know, you could have done that other transfer, and things go sideways like that. No, for sure. I can't help but think about you mentioned the first redemption, about how overly complicated it could be. All the rage back in the day was booking the free one way. Oh, you got to book a free one way, right? So I'm flying from Boston to Munich, Munich back to Boston. But of course, I should tack on another trip out to Phoenix on top of that, right? But I didn't realize how hard it is to find a ward space in one direction, let alone two directions, let alone tacking on a third flight in the other direction. Yeah. And I felt like I couldn't book it until it was this perfect thing. No way I would be distracted by that now. Is it still possible? I don't know. There's no way I find that much award availability. I don't see that kind of award availability at all. But I thought, because so many people were talking about it, that was the way it was done. Of course you'd do this on a combination of Lufthansa and US Airways or some crazy thing, right? It's like you hear about stuff out there that's more like gamesmanship than is necessary. So yeah, especially if it's not necessary, just keep it as simple as possible, for crying out loud. Don't book the round the world ticket just because you can.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about other stunts on another show, and that's definitely stunt level. This blog has been guilty of focusing on those things in the past as well, because like you said, it was very popular. The pricing has changed so much and the rules have changed so much that so much of that doesn't work. But I think all of that is a weakness, you know, the paralyzing complexity of it all and the wanting to maximize the situation and the dynamic pricing. You're like, I want to leave on a Saturday, and they're like, how's Wednesday? And you're like, no, Saturday. And they're like, nope, Wednesday. And there's nothing in between. You know, there's no compromise. There's no price differential, at least with airline, with bank points. It's like, do I want to spend $1,700 or do I want to spend $1,400? It's your decision. Do you want to fly on Wednesday or Saturday? But there are situations, destinations, dates that are effectively blacked out with airline miles. I mean, Jennifer Garner coming on the TV commercial saying no blackout dates with, you know, that's a bank point situation. And it, rightly so, it frustrates people because most people are traveling when most people are traveling. It's like a self-fulfilling bad situation with airline miles. Like, hey, you want to fly when? Thanksgiving? No. Christmas? Maybe around Christmas-ish, summer vacation, spring vacation. So it becomes difficult, very difficult with bank with airline miles around those really important holidays. And with kids and school and school schedules, everybody's moving in packs, bank points allow you to pivot and just pay what it costs, you know, just click the button. So definitely a weakness of airline miles. But bank points are not flawless, Robert. I will say that as an airline mile fan.
You have to give me the responsibility of flogging the bank points.
No. I will go ahead and flog the bank points for us here. You know, we talked about, you know, the bank points can be used for hotels. Like, man, you can book airline flights. You can also book hotels. Like a one-stop shop. You can book everything. But those hotel prices can oftentimes be extremely inflated. And they don't necessarily mean a good value. They can with the right situation, but sometimes hotels really aren't going to work out with bank points. So I think it's really a symptom of the limited upside potential. You know, we talked about a bank point having a value. That's it. That's the value. I mean, there were some bank points a long time ago that had these weird buckets where you could get to the top end of a value and,
oh gosh, Fidelity.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. But, you know, they've recognized the insanity of that, and this is the value. And so there are times where, hey, Jennifer Garner's right, there is no blackout, but effectively, are you going to spend $2,700 to fly for Thanksgiving because that's what the airline wants? No, it might as well be blacked out. The limited upside potential is one of the biggest problems. And the portals are often like an afterthought for these airlines, for these banks. And, you know, for an airline, the booking engine is, that's it. They're nothing without being able to book flights. So sometimes you see the booking engine for an airline being very robust, and then you can't even get an airline, you can't even get that airport to show up in a bank point. That yeah. Airport doesn't exist. We've never heard of Cusco. Like, what? That's like where everybody goes. Never heard of it, doesn't exist. Never heard of State College, never heard of Bermuda. You know, it's like, what? Like,
yeah, it seems like no problem when it's working, but the one it doesn't, these bank, you know, travel companies who they farmed it out to have varying degrees of interest in interacting with you. We've had some good success with Bank of America. You talk to a concierge there and they'll bend over backwards in some cases, but then they'll change the policies and they can't do anything for you at all. I was lucky in trying to book a simple flight, I thought, and the two currencies I had to go with were Wells Fargo and Bank of America. And wouldn't you know it, they have the same exact back end that they use. So the flights didn't appear on either one of those. So I'm trying all these games, like, you know, book it as a multi-city, book it as a, you know, I booked it as a one-way and it went through. And if it booked to have a round trip,
you had to book one person, like, right?
How could that
you had to
be?
Book a single person, right?
that was another problem if you want to convey your benefits through the other person. I did need to book it as two people. So yeah, booking the one-way worked, whereas booking a round trip didn't. I don't know why that is possible in this one obscure case, but a lot of things can happen. It can be inflated. It can be not there. And then I don't know if Wells Fargo has anybody that you can talk to about a complicated situation.
Well, I'm thinking as a parent with small kids, right? I can't book a kid alone, right? Like, I can't say 6 years old. Like,
trying to explain why.
The only reason I'm booking it, because the only way your engine will work is if I book as individual people, and it won't let me. It's so hyper individualized issues. But I think the one that I really want to talk and spend the most time on is that you need cards associated with these programs to stay open. And that could represent a big cost. You know, if you're trying to chase 2 cents per point per ultimate reward, and you're keeping an $800 a year card open to do that, that is not, unless you're traveling and transacting and really coupon booking very well with those cards, that's, those points might not lose any value, but you are eroding the value of them yearly by paying a massive annual fee. That's not the same thing that happens with airline miles. When they're in your airline account, you can close the associated credit card, and maybe it affects the expiration of those miles, or maybe it affects some of your benefits like getting a free bag, but it does not affect your ability to use those points. And so being able to be rational about the value of the points in a bank point program versus the cost to hold those points is, again, a decision that's very personal but very important.
I love that. I can't help but think about you know, our precious photographs, right? We used to have, you know, negatives and photo albums. And you think about any photo album you have and how yellowed it is and nasty it is, despite how acid-free the paper was or whatever it might have been. It just, the photos deteriorate over time. But in the digital world, you can have things go poof as well. And so you talk about airline miles versus bank points. Oh, you know, bank points aren't earning any interest, so you should use them. You should cash them out. Airline miles are always deflating, or there's always inflation in that category. So you need to be earning them and spending them in the same era, because if you earned them before, they were harder to accrue and they're more expensive to redeem. So there's, no matter which one you're talking about, there's different ways that they can malfunction on you, right? You can have an airline mile just expire because you didn't use it for 2 years and you just weren't very involved in that program. You can have your American Airlines account shut down or any number of accounts shut down. You can be defrauded. Somebody can log in and take all your miles and nobody would tell. There's just all kinds of different ways where your miles can go poof. Probably not a good idea to carry them around for a rainy day. But I was thinking too, as you were talking about a weakness of airline miles, is some of the most valuable airline miles are the ones that aren't promiscuous with bank point partners. Mm-hmm. You can't gin up an Alaska mile readily. SAS, we were talking about that. You can't just transfer membership rewards or ultimate rewards over to that program. And as a result, there's some really nice values that you can have in those programs.
But
you can't readily gin up a bunch of points to establish them. So it's like this like feast or famine situation, I find, where I don't need any Air France miles. I'll never use those things. And all of a sudden, poof.
I need them all.
They've enabled a trip and you need a bunch of them. And it's the thing that saved you. So it's a really tricky balance knowing. I find with bank points that I'm just cranking through them all the time. You know, need to book a family member to come visit us. Click the button. Book it. Done. We need to go here. Domestically, click the button, done. I just grind through those all the time. With certain types of airline miles, they just sit there and sit there and sit there, and all of a sudden, poof, I use a bunch of them. So a very different dynamic in that regard.
Yeah, and I like to hold just-in-time inventory and replenish as needed, but I love the discussion of that, like, irony of the most valuable miles are the hardest ones to acquire. I think that's so true. There are these examples here in the show notes where miles win, but I want to throw a curveball in here at the end, Robert. I want us to talk about a use of miles or bank points that doesn't get enough discussion in the points and miles space. Because it's so easy to go, international business class to Japan with Alaska or AA. Yeah, okay, we've heard that a million times. If you don't want to go to Japan, if you don't live in a city served by AA or JAL, or you got to fly two hops to get to LA or San Francisco, it might as well not even exist. So what is the underdeveloped or underspoken about use of bank points or airline miles? What's not getting enough discussion?
With airline miles or bank points?
Yeah, and I'll take airline miles since I spend more time with them. And maybe you can take bank points. What do you think?
Sounds good.
I'm not going to talk about business class fares at all, in fact, Robert. I'm not. I'm going to talk instead about international economy cabin redemptions, which I don't think get enough discussion. I don't think that gets enough discussion at all. Am I doing it? No, I'm not. But I said this, and I will say this forever. There are more people on every single airplane that are flying in economy than any other cabin. It's just a numbers situation. And when you have a big family, you know, I'm somebody with eight tickets. I'm flying multi-generational, 10 people. That's it. You're not going to be able to find anything but economy. And when you find them, sometimes there's these incredible offers. You know, you'll go to these websites and you'll see these, like, oh, you can fly round trip for $700 in October, but not when I want to go in summer. And the price in miles is relatively fixed all year long. So if you haven't looked at international economy cabin redemptions, there are some incredible offers. Not just AA. I'm talking about Air France, KLM. It cuts across a lot of alliances, and it's a less discussed redemption than I think it needs to be. Because, there are people who are fine with that. Like, I don't care. I just want to go there. I don't want to waste my extra miles. Or I need a lot of seats, and I think that that's the one that I want to highlight here, Robert.
I like that. It's a great redemption. And it's, you know, if you just think about what you would do if you didn't have the ability to book business or first flights, you would just say, hey, how much does it cost to fly to Europe? $1,000. Okay, this is what we're going to pay. And then you have a redemption here that's a terrific, terrific redemption. Like, say, for a bigger family, would enable a trip to happen. And flights from the East Coast to Europe aren't that long anyways. It's as far as flying to California. So, you know, maybe you don't even need that business or better. On the bank point side, I'm having a hard time picking one program, but I think it works great for domestic airfare. That's where I really see it being strong. And I don't think it's too hard to develop enough to for you and your family to travel around domestically in a lot of cases, even first class lately. Some airlines are really compressing the premium that they charge for first class cabins on a case-by-case basis, route-by-route basis. Sometimes it's just not that much. And it's very nice to be able to book the flight you want nonstop on a good airline and sit in a totally fine, you know, economy seat or first class. You know, Delta really doesn't charge a lot more for first a lot of times. And you can develop enough traction in that in the Bank of America program with the Elite card that we've talked a lot about on the show. The Wells Fargo has a really surprisingly good program to be able to do that with. And that's on top of American Express and Chase, which are very straightforward. We talked a lot in the last show about the Chase Sapphire Reserve and all the things that come with that. I think those are becoming very good in hotels. I'm really excited about the Edit program there with Chase. But just, I don't think it's too hard to say we should be able to fly good flight times direct on respectable domestic carriers. And I don't think it's too hard to do that with bank points. I think bank points is the best way to do that. That's the biggest strength I see for bank points.
I love that, Robert. Can I add on with Chase? You know, you've got like an inverted yield curve almost going on sometimes where you could have with the Chase Sapphire, the new 2-cent Chase Sapphire option on United, you could have a situation where it's less points, bank points, in first class than in economy.
We can't afford to fly economy. I love it.
Right. I haven't found a specific example. If I can spend some time after the show and put one in here in the show notes. But, you know, if you only get 1 cent or even if you get 1.5 cents in economy and you get 2 cents in business or first class on a domestic flight, it could be a reverse cost upgrade.
It can happen. Cool. I think it will happen when that 1.5 grandfathered goes away, right? Where you'll have 1 cent a piece or 2 cents a piece. And I mean, will it have an impactful change on the way cabins are sold? I mean, are more people going to be flying up front if it costs less Chase points to do it?
Maybe. But I also think
those cabins aren't big, right? I mean, a lot of those planes are not like, big. You know, 8 seats.
And I do think that Chase could just be like, whoa, 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 we missed the boat on this. We messed up. And they could just pull
it back.
We
swung too hard.
Yeah, we swung too hard, too far. 97% of our bookings are in United First Class. 3% are in United Economy. We need to get this back the other direction. But yeah, that inversion could happen. And it. I don't think I can say I've seen it with airline miles. If it's cheap, if it's a low-cost business class fare, it's usually an even lower cost economy fare.
Mm. And yeah.
Maybe it has. But wow, what a talk, Robert. I mean, we did a 40-minute talk just about bank points versus airline miles, and there is no winner. This was never going to be like a pick a winner. We would have Garth on if we were going to do that, of course, right?
Yeah.
So what are we going to say to close it out?
I think you have cases where like with Chase and American Express, where you really have to know how to do both. It's not, you know, right? They don't have airline miles, but they transfer to airline miles, and they have pretty good value on the upside with bank points. So with any even one of those programs, you have to get adept at sussing out which is the better way to go. And, you know, maybe don't sweat it at some point, right? Get comfortable doing it a certain way on your hometown carrier and just keep doing that. It's probably going to be pretty close, I would think. You know, like the cases where you transfer to United versus using the Chase portal. If you're, you know, causing yourself, you know, consternation about trying to make that decision every time. In a lot of cases, it's probably closer than you would think. So just book the way that you're comfortable with. Just be aware of the implications that might be downstream negative impacts, right? If you really place a big premium on refundability, go with the airline miles. If you just want, you know, simple book the flight time of the day that you want, yeah, go with bank points. I think it could be a lot simpler if you filter out some of the noise that exists out there on the fringes about outsized redemptions.
I love that, Robert. Yeah. And I think travel more. Right. I mean, the world is great. There's so much out there to do. Use those points to get out there and just experience it. I think that's my takeaway. Yeah.
Let's close it out. Well, thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth discussion about points and miles, visit us at patreon.com/milonomics. There you'll get a special link to listen to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about topics like these.
As always, you can reach us on social media. I'm at Milonomics and Robert is at Robert Dwyer. Until then, we'll see you on the site.